Welcome once again to On Mic with me, Jordan Rich. I'm someone who loves my work. As a broadcaster for 40 years, it's a joy to continue interviewing fascinating people here in my very own podcast. This podcast featuring conversations with voiceover artists, actors, producers, writers, singers, and some of the more creative people I've come to meet in my travels. In this Trekker's humble opinion, today's guest has had one of the coolest gigs ever, portraying Captain James T. Kirk in Star Trek Continues, a web series, an homage to the 1960s classic Star Trek that launched it all.
Space, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the starship Enterprise. Its continuing mission, to explore strange new worlds, to seek out new life and new civilizations, to boldly go where no man has gone before.
That gentleman right there is Vic Mignogna. He is a talented singer, composer, writer, producer, voice actor, with numerous awards, by the way, for his work in anime and other animation. But it's his role as Captain James T. Kirk and his devotion to Star Trek that is a story worth telling. And I offer Vic the Vulcan greeting, live long and prosper, and to make you feel right at home, my friend, we're beaming this directly from the bridge of the Enterprise, as you can hear, thanks to the power of imagination. Vic, how are you?
My friend, it is a pleasure to join you guys. I'm doing well, doing well. I just got back, actually. I'm actually directing an animation series in Dallas right now, but I just got back from screening our final episode at Pixar and then ILM. So we've got fans at Pixar that we screened the episode for on Monday, and then we went to Industrial Light and Magic on Tuesday and shared episode 11 with them.
So, I'm going to make you very happy and let you know that you're dropping some pretty impressive names there, but I've seen a lot of stuff online, a lot of attempts to do what you and your crew have done, but I'll tell you that the last two episodes, and I hate saying last two for now, are just some of the best television I've seen in terms of the writing, the acting, and needless to say, the production values.
Thank you so much. I'm honored. I am so very proud of what our entire production team has accomplished. It's been a long time coming, and an awful lot of love and passion have been poured into it. And it's really gratifying to be able to finally share it with people and see that so many people are enjoying it.
We're going to talk about some of the other work that you do, and you're multifaceted and talented, but I'm fascinated with how this whole thing got started. You and the people with you obviously are fans of the original series. Where did the idea to do Star Trek Continues come from? Is it your baby or what?
Oh, it is all my baby.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It is my personal passion project, but I will tell you this. Where it came from, ironically, was from working with some other fan productions and seeing and reaching the conclusion that such a production could be done so much better.
Mm-hmm.
I've been acting since I was, goodness, 10, mm-hmm. 11.
Mm-hmm.
I started acting because of Star Trek. And Bill Shatner, and wanting to do what they were doing that moved me so much. And so I went to school and started auditioning for school plays. So I've been acting since I was very, very young. And then I started getting interested in filmmaking when I was very, very young, and actually went on to get a college degree in film. So I've spent the last 40 years discovering building and perfecting and, you know, working the learning the skills necessary to do something of a pretty decent caliber.
Well, I've got to ask you the question you probably get asked a lot, the closeness you have in physicality to William Shatner circa 1965. I have literally studied every episode that you guys have done, and I am impressed and amazed at how much you, without doing an impression, you're not doing an impersonation, but how much of Shatner's performance is in your performance, the physicality, Vic?
Well, you know, that's completely a byproduct of just loving Bill Shatner and being so taken and having such enormous admiration and respect and love for what he did in the original series. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not trying to imitate. In fact, I love and respect him way too much to ever do some kind of a satire or parody. But just watching that show as intensely and as often as I did when I was a little boy, I think in large part, a lot of my general acting style is very similar to his. And I have a funny story about that. When I was in college, I played the lead in Camelot.
Oh, yes, of course.
The musical Camelot. Mm-hmm. I played King Arthur in Camelot. And as you may recall, Richard Harris played the role of King Arthur in the motion picture.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody came up to me one night after one of the performances and said, "I just love what you did. You were like a perfect blend of Richard Harris and William Shatner." And I remember thinking, well, I guess that makes sense because I have loved Captain Kirk and Bill Shatner's performance as Captain Kirk ever since I was a little boy. So Star Trek continues, as I've said many times, is my love letter to Star Trek, my gift back to a show that inspired me, and in particular, Bill Shatner and his inspiration to get me involved in acting.
You know, you and I are kindred spirits here because I'm the same way. I'm not an actor in your caliber, but I've been doing voice work and acting on radio for years. And Shatner's influence, that character's influence, sort of creeps into my psyche. I guess the question that I really wanted to ask you about him is, have you two connected? Has he reached out to you, and have you reached out to him?
As you mentioned earlier, I mean, I've been a voice actor.
Mm-hmm.
For animated series and video games for almost 20 years now, and I've done over 300 different animated series and video games. And I've been fortunate enough to do so many and do some really popular ones that I've developed a considerable fan base in that industry.
Right.
In the animation industry. So I started getting invited to conventions to sign autographs. And I actually met a gentleman there named Gary Hassan. Turns out that Gary represents Bill Shatner and Leonard Nimoy and Patrick Stewart and all of the Star Trek people and Doctor Who actors, Battlestar Galactica actors, you name it. He's been in the business of event management for many, many years, longtime friend of Bill's, and he asked me if he could represent me. And so I, of course, said I would be honored. And since that time, a few years ago, Bill and I have become good friends. We've spent many, many social events together, have dinner. We've done several events in different cities where we've gone out to dinner and chatted in the green room. I've been to his office several times in Studio City. To take him gifts because I love him. And I'm very humbled to say that Bill and I are dear friends. And I will tell you, too, that from the very beginning, I think probably for the first 2 years that I spent time around him, I never even spoke the words Star Trek.
Hmm.
We were making Star Trek Continues, and yet I didn't even tell him about it because I didn't want him to feel that I was asking for anything. I didn't want him to feel that I was, you know, trying to push my nerd fandom on him in some way. He's certainly had his share of that for 40 years, 45 years. So I wanted to become friends with him as peers, you know, as two actors that were signing autographs at a convention.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, my table would be one or two spots down from his table, and you know, something inside, the 12-year-old inside of me was was geeking out a little bit that I was signing autographs, you know, had a group of fans in front of my table, like Bill had people in front of his table. But, you know, still, he is such an enormous influence from my early years. And I've had the privilege to even tell him that I discovered Star Trek when my parents divorced and my dad left. Mm. And Captain Kirk was very much of a father figure and a role model. And I had the privilege to tell him that. Ironically, sitting at dinner on the patio of a restaurant overlooking the Persian Gulf in Dubai. We were both guests at the Middle East Film and Comic-Con.
Oh.
And one night when we went out sightseeing and shopping several days that we were there, but one of the nights we went to this beautiful restaurant and I had the opportunity to tell him. Ironically, somebody else at the table asked me about Star Trek Continues. And so I answered their question without directing any of it to Bill, but he was interested in knowing more about it, and I shared it with him, and then I put my arm around his shoulder and I said, you know, this is all as a tribute to you and what you and the others created that left such a huge indelible impression on
me
and so many
people. You use the term love letter, and it, if you watch the series, folks, and I know hundreds of thousands, if not millions, online have checked in to watch it, you'll note that everything about the series reminds you of the original because it's such a beautiful, delicate handling of the original material, the sets and the costumes and the uniforms and the sound of everything. And I guess the question is, how did you get access to all of this stuff? I mean, that was some pretty good research on your part to rebuild what was 40, 45, 50 years ago first.
Well, I'll tell you, our director of photography, Matt Busey, is also a very gifted architect. And he and I found the original floor plans online. I mean, they're not hard to find.
Mm-hmm.
You can find them. And you can see a bird's eye view of the layout of the Stage 9 where they shot Star Trek. And you can see the bending corridor and all of the sets interconnected to the corridor, and then the bridge sitting off by itself in the corner. And so we acquired a building in South Georgia and proceeded to and Matt Busey proceeded to extrapolate from these floor plans all of the dimensions and measurements and sizes of everything. And then once we had those, we took spray paint and we sprayed the outline of each of the rooms and the corridor and then started building. And that was, you know, 5 years ago.
There are some wonderful YouTube pieces about the behind the scenes, and I've seen many of them. And it's, you can just tell everyone's having a blast doing this.
Jordan, I have to tell you, that's the real beauty of it, is that, you know, 95% of the things that people watch on television or, you know, in the theaters are things that a bunch of people were paid gobs of money to do.
Mm-hmm.
And Star Trek Continues is nobody is making any money. It is purely a labor of love. It is a passion project for the sake of love and tribute. Because it is owned by CBS, you can't just sell Star Trek. I mean, we can't sell views. We can't sell downloads of the episode. We can't sell discs. We can't monetize our YouTube pages, even though we've got over 7 million views now.
Wow.
But I must tell you, that's not why I started it.
Mm-hmm.
I started it because I wanted to pay tribute to the original series. And I found a lot of wonderfully talented people to come alongside and be a part of the production who were really gifted in their fields, but they also shared a childhood love of the original series of Star Trek.
What's so cool, too, and again, because I'm such a devotee, is finding connections and Easter eggs throughout. Certainly the arrival of, say, one of the characters from the early series, the fellow who played Apollo 45 years ago, or John DeLancey coming back, who was in Star Trek The Next Generation. These are great connections and tie-ins, even if you're not a fanboy like me. I mean, they're just fun.
You know what else? else? You know what else? If you go through our series and look at our guest stars, they're guest stars from almost every different sci-fi franchise out there. We've had guest stars from Battlestar Galactica, Doctor Who, Buffy, Star Wars, Incredible Hulk, Farscape, Doctor Who again, The Expanse. We've had the original Battlestar as well as the new one. We've had a lot of great guest stars, and Buck Rogers. And this is something that I wanted to do. In particular, these are all actors, Jordan, that I have met on the convention circuit. And as I was sitting in the green room at a convention in New York or Rhode Island or Chicago, sitting there talking with somebody like Colin Baker from Doctor Who John DeLancey or Lou Ferrigno, I would tell them what I'm doing and show them some pictures, only to find out that Lou Ferrigno was a big Star Trek fan when he was a little boy. And so when it came time to cast a big, green, angry Orion slave trader, I asked Lou Ferrigno if he would do it, and he did not hesitate. And never once, let me just tell you something, never once has any of our guest stars asked me the question, well, how much does it pay?
Well, you're talking about a series that was on the air and canceled after 3 years and has lived on to create and pretty much be the formidable, iconic pop culture presence in our lives. I mean, no series has gone on to spawn so many other series or so many films, or now you bringing back the original series to such a great extent. It's an amazing phenomenon. And if you saw my office, I mean, you'd see everything from Star Trek mugs and little phasers and communicators and all. I mean, I'm not kidding. I mean,
I love it. I love it. Dude, you're definitely in the right place here. Surrounding yourself with the right people. You are a kindred spirit.
We'll be right back to the program in just a moment. I did want to take time to thank you for listening to On Mic with me, Jordan Rich. You'll find links to my website and Facebook page in the show notes. So I invite you to reach out to me. I'd love to hear your ideas for future shows and guests. Since I've heard you take requests, here's one from me. When you get a moment, I'd love for you to rate and review this podcast in all of the important places we hang out, including Apple, Android, Google Play, Stitcher, and more. It'll go a long way in helping me build this audience up and keep the studio humming with interesting content. And now, back to On Mic with Jordan Rich. Hey, that's me.
Captain's log, stardate 6995.1. Several days ago, the Enterprise was rerouted to Aldebaran 3, where, at a top-secret facility, Starfleet housed 25 humans with extraordinary ESP quotients. Leaving a renegade Vulcan and his wife Lana to distract us with illusions, the remaining Esper seized the Federation vessel SS Halifax and set course for the energy barrier surrounding our galaxy. Commander Spock sought the help of Romulan Commander Charvanek, an unauthorized act for which he has been duly reprimanded. The Romulans agreed to accompany the Enterprise to the barrier in order to intercept the Halifax. But we arrived too late. The Halifax already entered the galactic energy barrier and, in doing so, uplifted the Esper crew with superhuman powers. Utilizing their abilities, the Esper somehow seized control of our sister ship, the USS Congo.
Relinquish command, or the Enterprise will suffer the same fate as the Hood.
Back now to Vic Mignogna, the captain of the USS Enterprise, and Star Trek Continues. I want to ask you, though, about why it ended, and the fact that it ended the way it did. It's a perfect ending. It's like, I would not want to see it end. I'd like to see it go on forever. But if you're going to end something because you sort of have to, you couldn't have done it better than that two-part episode that people can see.
Thank you. Well, let me just say this. It was always my intention to end the series. It was never my intention to just make episodes ad infinitum. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It wasn't my intention to just make episodes until we ran out of good ideas or we got too old or everybody got bored and it just kind of fizzled out. My intention all along was to make one more TV season and finish the five-year mission. Mm-hmm. Now, my initial plan was to make 13 episodes. That seemed like a good number for another TV season in today's TV season numbers. Mm-hmm. But about a year and a half ago, there was, putting it tactfully, a shift in the fan film landscape. I don't want to go into detail, but Star Trek fans know what I'm talking about. There was another production that raised a massive amount of money in the name of Star Trek and then proceeded to spend that money on themselves and pay themselves salaries and fly around the world in first class and buy fancy dinners, but not make the thing that they were given the money to make. And when this happened, CBS was forced to, out of necessity, to protect their license. And they did, and filed a lawsuit against this other group. Right. And when it was all said and done, one of the remaining elements was a list of fan film guidelines. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, myself, Star Trek Continues, and several other productions were basically collateral damage, in the guidelines. But the good news was that we realized that we were not going to be able to make 13 episodes. That was the bad news. But the good news was we felt like we could wrap it up quickly, and we got the feeling that if we did it quickly, if we really, really kicked it into high gear and finished the series quickly, we would be able to get it done and do what we always intended to do. And that was return the Enterprise to Earth, complete the five-year mission, and then explain through story why each of the characters made the decisions that they made, and leave everybody where they were when the motion picture picked them up.
You also did something, Vic, that I thought was extra special, and I think many have seen this and many will see it, and that is you appear to the fans at one point in a separate piece, a clip, thanking the fans in full uniform, actually in Star Trek the movie, the motion picture uniform, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. Yeah, that was the last thing that we shot, Jordan. The very last thing that we shot in our series was the speech that Kirk gives to the crew in the auditorium at Starfleet Command on Earth. And we shot it on green screen because, of course, no such auditorium actually exists. Right. And when we finished and realized that this was pretty much the end, I just recorded a little message to the fans thanking them for joining us on this journey and for all of their support and enthusiasm.
Let me just shift gears a little bit because I don't want to take up all of your time. You're a busy guy, but we've talked a little bit about the anime and the voiceover world, which you've been so successful at. And this is certainly what we try to do on this podcast is share a little of the behind-the-scenes secret of what this business is all about. First of all, anime, explain that to the uninitiated. And also, how did you become the guy? I mean, you have become a superstar in this field. Tell me how that happened.
Anime basically is animation created and produced in Japan. The term anime is a word that is generically used to refer to Japanese animation. From my era, and I'm not sure how old you are, but when I was a little boy, I was a big fan of Speed Racer.
Oh yeah,
and Battle of the Planets and Kimba the White Lion, and I liked them. And they were weird. They didn't look like Scooby-Doo.
Right.
They didn't sound like Bugs Bunny. They were different and unique in their own way and in their own style. And I really liked them, but I didn't know why they were so different. And I came to realize later that it was because they were anime. These were shows that were all created and produced in Japan. And then an American company would buy the license to the show and translate the scripts into English and dub them into English with English actors.
Mm-hmm.
Since then, about 20 years ago, I was working on a video production in Houston, Texas, and a friend of mine said, hey, you've got a lot – a friend of mine that I was working with on the video said, you've got a lot of acting experience, don't you? And I said, yeah. I mean, I've been doing theater and you know, stage and some film work since I was very young. And he said, you ought to go and audition for this place in town. They buy these Japanese animated shows and they dub them into English and they're looking for actors. And I thought, wow, you mean like Speed Racer? And he said, yeah. And so I went and auditioned and I got cast as Vega in Street Fighter II.
Mm.
And that was 20 years ago. And at the time, I thought it was just a one-time freak little weird thing I got to do one time.
Yeah.
At the time, I was writing and producing music professionally. I've got six of my own original music CDs on iTunes, and I've produced 20 or 30 records for different artists, and I've produced hundreds of jingles and post scores for radio and television. So I was working as a composer producer, and I did this one little anime voice thing, and then I went back to my regular job. And a few weeks later, they called me and they said, "Hey, we have another show. Do you want to come and be in it?" And I thought, "Sure." And then another and another and another and another. And I was very fortunate to be kind of on the ground level right when anime just exploded. And then the next thing you know, it was on Toonami and Nickelodeon and Disney and Sci-Fi Channel and Adult Swim, Cartoon Network. And I was very, very blessed to be on the ground floor. And, you know, now fast forward 20 years and anime is a very, very big industry. A lot of people know Miyazaki, some of the feature films that Miyazaki has made that have had theatrical releases. And I've just been very fortunate to have played a lot of really neat roles and a lot of really good shows that have had a great response. And so I do a lot of appearances at conventions around the country and even internationally. Right now, I'm actually directing a show called Junie Tyson at Funimation in Dallas, just having a great time. And I'm very, very grateful for the opportunities I've been given.
Well, we want to thank you certainly for joining us today. But before I go, I've got to ask a very important question. A, do the sets for Star Trek Continues still exist? And is there any chance for a kid from Boston to take a tour, A? And B, do you still have your uniform, Captain?
Well, a resounding yes to both questions. Absolutely, the sets are standing right now. If you and I could hop on a plane and fly down to Jacksonville, Florida, they are all right there, as beautiful and pristine as they were when we last shot on them earlier this year.
Well, I'm very heartened to hear that, because the original series, I remember when they destroyed everything in those days. They, you know, they also destroyed Johnny Carson tapes. I mean, that's the way they did it back then. And then and I think of an episode of The Next Generation, they rebuilt the set for one episode and everyone went, wow. And you guys, just remarkable how you captured the essence of that original series.
Thank you very, very much. And yes, the sets, it would be an absolute tragedy to have them torn down. So that's never been an option. We've been looking at possibilities, and I'm hopeful that, you know, that we'll be able to come up with something, because all that matters to me, again, I'm not interested in making any money at all. I'm just interested in people get as many people as possible getting the chance to see them, because to walk through them, to run your hand along the wall of the corridor and to step up onto the transporter platform and know that you're physically there in the space, you know, to walk around the bridge and sit in the captain's chair it's euphoric, Jordan. It's really euphoric.
Is there one line of dialogue that stays with you from the Star Trek Continues series, or one passage? Kirk had some great speeches in the original series, and you too had some things that you were able to deliver. Is there one that stands out as a favorite?
Oh my gosh, too many.
Yeah,
way too many. I mean, I've as the executive producer, I've either written the stories or at least had my hand in editing the episode, editing the scripts, and deciding what I wanted to say and how I wanted to say it for every character, for every script. And so there were a lot of really, really wonderful moments. I don't think I could pick just one.
Yeah, that wasn't a fair question, actually, because I would never be able to zero in on one moment that I've enjoyed more than another on the series. We should also mention that, I mean, there's so many connections. James Doohan's son is playing Scotty. I mean, how cool is that?
How crazy is that? And wow. we've had you know, connections to the original series. Like you mentioned Michael Forrest, who played Apollo.
Right.
Well, in our series finale, episodes 10 and 11, not only is Chris Doohan playing his dad's role, but the female Romulan commander from the original series, her daughter, Amy Rydell, is actually playing her mother's role, and it is startling.
Uncanny. I had to look it up because I looked up the original actress, and I realized it was her mom. I believe, is she still with us, I believe?
Yes, she is. Joanne Linville.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
Yes. In fact, you know what? When I asked Amy to do this, Amy started rehearsing with her mom. So imagine getting pointers on how to play the Romulan commander from the Romulan commander.
Well, it just gives me chills. I'm so excited. And I guess
in answer to your second question.
Oh, yes. The uniforms.
You still have every uniform. I've got four or five versions of the standard gold tunic.
Mm-hmm.
And then I've got, you know, the V-neck and the formal dress that we had made for episode 7.
Right.
The mirror vest, the admiral's uniform. Yeah. I have lots of goodies, even some velour, even though we never wore velour. I never wore velour on our show. I have a velour as well. So, yeah, I have quite a collection of amazing.
And it wouldn't be fair for me to end without congratulating you for something completely different, and that is for having an association with the world champion Houston Astros.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, thank you for that.
Well, I'm in Boston, so, you know, Red Sox country, and we played you guys in the playoffs. But you've sung the anthem for them a bunch of times, right?
I've sung the anthem many times. In fact, when I first moved to Houston, I actually worked as a cameraman for HSE, the television company that used to shoot and broadcast the Astros baseball games. So I used to run camera down on low first base camera and as you said, sung the anthem several times. And very, very proud of our Astros. Now, I must tell you, though, since we're talking sports, I grew up in Pittsburgh, and I am a big fan of the Steelers, and they are doing very well this year.
Yes. I know where you're going with this.
Fingers crossed for that.
You don't want to hear from me because it's Patriot country, and we all know it's Romulans versus Klingons versus the Federation when you start talking about that stuff.
I'm sure.
Well, listen, I can only say this. You've brought us a lot of joy with this series, but also with the other work you've done, and the night is young, as they say, and there's a whole galaxy out there that's at your disposal, I'm sure, to enjoy and be creative. Thank you so much for joining us, Vic. A real pleasure and honor.
It is my pleasure, Jordan. Thank you for having me, and I hope that your listeners and you will spread the good word about Star Trek Continues, StarTrekContinues.com. All of the episodes are there, all free to watch. It's pure love.
All right. Well, thank you to Vic, and Godspeed.
You too.
We just completed the final shot from our final episode. And this will be the last time I put on the uniform of Captain Kirk. I want to thank all of you supporters, friends, family, people enthusiastic about what we have done at Star Trek Continues. We certainly have been inspired and energized by your love and your support and your kindness towards our production. So from all of us here at Star Trek Continues, we wish you the very best. May the wind be ever at your backs, and live long and prosper, each and every one of you. God bless you.